Okay, welcome everybody. I want to call this public meeting of the Oregon Board of Forestry to order. I'm Tom Imeson, Chair of the Board. Obviously, this meeting is being held virtually. It's our second board meeting that we've coordinated online, but we do have a couple of additions this time. We are live streaming this meeting on YouTube, and for the decision items on the forefront of the agenda today, oral testimony opportunity is available in real time. With these additions, panelists and presenters, we want to ensure our viewers online can follow along in today's virtual meeting. So before we start, I'll go over some housekeeping tips to help keep us on track. For everyone participating or presenting, please silence your cell phones and limit background noises. Remember to use the mute feature when you are not speaking. If your video is enabled, feel free to disable if you need to step away, and don't hesitate to use the chat function on Zoom to connect with our ODF support team in Salem during the meeting. To ensure that folks online can follow our board proceedings with the live testimony incorporated, I'll remind everyone of our general order of operations for the day. Generally, I'll briefly introduce the item and invite the presenters to begin. For board members, if you have clarifying questions, please use the raise hand function and I'll call on you. And I've got help from others who will make sure that we're seeing those hands as they're raised. Presenters, we'll do our best to ask questions one at a time. After presentations, the public comment period will be open to those who signed up previously. Commenters will be provided 3 minutes to offer testimony. Please help us with that and keeping us on track. Note that in the case of two topics, the Forest Protective Association budgets and the request for a temporary rule in the Siskiyou geo-region, we have scheduled a block of time for invited testimony, and then that will be followed by general public comment. Following public comment, board members may have follow-up questions for presenters, but we generally begin our discussion or a motion is proposed. Board members, we will use a roundtable approach for the voting process, which seemed to work well at our previous meeting, so we'll need you to unmute while we're voting to make sure we correctly record you. Additionally, members of the public, we ask that if you would like to submit written testimony for this meeting and have it included in the record of this meeting, please send it your comments to us by June 17th. This will help in the preparation of our board's meeting minutes. Please note that pursuant to ORS 192-6602-I, the board will meet in closed executive session starting at 5 p.m. The purpose of the session will be to review and evaluate the state forester's performance. Representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. This session is otherwise closed to the public. We will take a break after the main meeting portion is concluded and join the virtual executive session. So, any questions about this? Then if not, we'll move to a roll call to ascertain that we have quorum. So please unmute board members so you can do that. Nils Christofferson.
Here.
Cindy Deacon Williams.
Here.
Joe Justice.
Here.
Jim Kelly.
Here.
Brendan McComb.
Here.
Mike Rose.
Here.
And I'm Tom Imeson. I'm obviously here. So we'll now move on to consent agenda items. Is there a motion for approval of consent items A through C?
So moved.
Seconded.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. I guess I'll call your names again so we do this and make sure that we have you've appropriately recorded. So Nils Christofferson.
Aye.
Cindy Deacon Williams.
Aye.
Joe Justice.
Aye.
Jim Kelly.
Aye.
Brendan McComb.
Aye.
Mike Rose. And I'm Tom Imeson. I'm aye on this motion also. So the motion carries unanimously. And now we'll move to agenda item one, which is the state forester's opening comments.
Good morning, folks. I'm going to provide a brief update on current issues which really includes COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on the organization, including financial. I'll also provide an update on our fire finances. But I'm going to start with a comment on our broader social issues. We're living in stressful, uncertain, and often unsettling times. It's only the halfway point, but 2020 has already tested our resolve in many ways. Months of physical distancing to keep the coronavirus at bay gave way to a new reality of record unemployment and economic crisis. Then as states began to cautiously reopen, we were dealt another blow to our sense of community safety and equity in the form of the nationwide civil arrest in response to the death of George Floyd in Minnesota. Vulnerable populations of all types are currently in crisis. Early studies suggest that the COVID-19 death rates among Black and Latino persons are substantially higher than in other ethnic or racial groups. People of Asian descent worldwide have faced discrimination since the coronavirus first took hold in China. Many of those working lower wage jobs risk COVID exposure and infection to go to work every day because they cannot afford not to. Racism, prejudice, and social inequity are still life-altering and potentially life-ending societal issues. This week's protests are a stark reminder that while progress has been made, we are nowhere near true equity in America. All as public employees, we have chosen to serve our fellow Oregonians, all of our fellow Oregonians. Diversity, equity, inclusion are at the core of who I am, and as director of ODF, I'm committed to those values being at the core of this organization as well. Every ODF employee has a right to feel welcome and safe, and the responsibility to ensure their coworkers feel the same. While we can't solve the problems of social inequity or institutional racism and prejudice on our own, that does not mean we cannot work towards solutions every day. We will continue to incorporate and emphasize the principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion in our hiring, decision-making, and engagement process in all aspects of our business. We remain committed to embracing the value of differences in experience, ideas, views, and beliefs. We are more effective as an agency when we have diverse voices and perspective throughout our ranks. The COVID pandemic has affected most aspects of our organizations, including adding stress and creating uncertainties. The recent events only add another layer of stress and concerns for the vast majority of Oregon's public servants who are committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion. The pandemic has significantly increased our workload and have affected all aspects of the way we conduct business. Some workload increases came with the need to transition our organization to a teleworking environment and to provide a safe working environment for those that cannot or choose not to telework. We also had additional planning to prepare for fire season, coordinating with our federal cooperators at the national and regional levels, and refining at the local level with our landowner and operator partners. This workload came at a time when our fire leadership and all three of our incident management teams were deployed to assist with the COVID-19 response. As I discussed at the April meeting, the pandemic has affected the state's economy due to our response to the virus. The impact is occurring in the timber market, with mills implementing temporary shutdowns and with a decline in log prices. We project that state forest revenues will decline as timber prices decrease. We also project declines in harvest tax revenues that partially fund our private forest administration of the Forest Practices Act. The June economic and revenue forecast was released on May 20th by the State Office of Economic Analysis. Overall, it's projecting 2.7 $1 billion less in state revenues for the 2019-21 biennium, with $1.9 billion less in general fund and the remainder in lottery and corporate tax revenue. As the state lifts restrictions, the economy will have a strong but incomplete initial rebound. The forecast also projects a larger decline, $4.4 billion less for the 21-23 biennium. We are also seeing increased expenditures as we provide support for the state's response to COVID-19, as well as in the additional preparation needed for fire season. For March and April, additional personal service costs total nearly $790,000, and additional service and supplies were nearly $12,000. So what does this mean for our budget? Unfortunately, we do not know at this time. There are three ways the state can address the budget shortfall. The legislature can come back at its regular scheduled 2021 session in January and bring the budget back into balance. The governor can use her allotment authority to bring the budget back into balance. However, that authority would require the governor to reduce general fund appropriations by the same percentage. And the third is the governor calls a special session of the legislature to rebalance the budget. The governor and the legislative leadership have been having conversations about this option, and while nothing is definite, late June is still a possibility. At the request of the Chief Financial Office, we did plan for an 8.5% reduction to our general fund allotment by appropriations. Our reduction target was approximately $6.3 million, $3.3 million, was from Protection Division, $1.4 million from Private Forest Division, $1.3 million from our Administration Division, and $264,000 from Federal Forest Restoration, and a small amount, $17,000 general fund reduction for land purchases by the State Forest Division. This was an anomaly. We got $200,000 to purchase some property. Reductions of this amount would significantly impair the department's ability to meet its mission. Reductions to staffing level and service supplies in private forests will mean less consistency and effectiveness in Forest Practice Act administration. The reduction in stewardship capacity means slower response time to complaints, less landowner assistance, and less FPA enforcement. Holding positions vacant would result in a 50% reduction in the division's forest health unit, which would mean significant degradation to the ability to evaluate and monitor the health of Oregon's forest lands. The proposed cuts would also reduce our ability to conduct sudden oak death treatment activities and our ability to perform critical maintenance and improvements to the electronic notification system. Finally, continued vacancies in private forest positions will directly affect the division's ability to provide support to the Board of Forestry, such as the West Oregon Streamside Protection Review, planning work on future compliance audits, and other monitoring-related topics. Much of the Protection Division's reductions would happen at the district level and would result in the inability to provide an adequate level of fire protection. The $3.2 million general fund cut equates to a total reduction of $8.1 million because of matching payments by landowners. While the districts did plan to take one-time savings such as deferring maintenance and equipment replacement, the plan affects 90 fire personnel, including total reduction to 65 seasonal firefighters, including 3 10-person crews and 13 engines, 2 equipment operators, 2 catch coordinators, a dispatcher, lead investigator, a PEP coordinator, an IT technician, and a public information officer. It also eliminates 3 helicopters and 2 fixed-wing aircraft and $185,000 of funding from the Rangeland Fire Protection Associations. With fewer resources, it would be more difficult for us to catch fires early and keep them small, which means more acres burned, higher firefighting costs, and more smoke in communities throughout Oregon. And particularly with COVID, smoke's the last thing we need. Our federal forest restoration program is facing reduced funding for seasonal workers for timber sale and restoration project work, and reduced funding for technical analysis and science support of the collaboratives and their partners. We are exploring opportunities to use federal funds to lessen these impacts. Finally, the various programs within administration would all have to carry vacancies for the rest of the biennium, resulting in less human resources, information technology, public affairs, facilities, finance, and motor pool support for the entire agency. Reductions in administration would also affect the department's ability to implement the forthcoming recommendations by MGO, the financial consultant hired by the state to review and improve ODF's financial processes. Given this uncertainty, we have taken action to minimize potential impacts. We've implemented a hiring freeze on all permanent positions on April 27th to stay in effect through May 31st. I just extended the hiring freeze until we have a clearer understanding of the potential impacts of reductions. The effect of this freeze is lower current capacity. For example, we're not filling Chad Davis's position, reducing capacity for the work on the climate change and overall overarching issues board work plans, as well as support for federal forest restoration and shared stewardship. This same thing is true for private forest. We are holding vacant all the positions identified in the reduction plan now. So the division is currently experiencing the loss of capacity I just described. On a brighter note, while state forests are expecting decreased revenue from decline in timber prices, they will continue to implement the reorganization to a more efficient structure, including hiring staff. As designed, their self-imposed hiring freeze several years ago, business improvement and cost containment measures have positioned the division to weather a recession. The division did take a pause to prioritize recruitments and to identify positions that may provide options for other of our employees. They will be using a set of financial metrics to track and adjust as the economic impacts of the pandemic continue to play out. With these tools in place, they will prudently restart their hiring to complete their reorganization. The uncertainty in the financial situation also affect decision topics on today's agenda. In the first decision topic, the board considers approval of our forest protection 2021 fiscal budget and assessment rates. The budgets were designed to provide an adequate level of protection given the legislatively approved budget. As indicated by the recent submitted letters from forest landowners and their associations, they are concerned with the impacts the budget reduction would have on level of protection and the certification of rates. We must submit certified rates to the counties by July 1. Given the uncertainty, we will be asking you to approve the submitted budgets that were approved by the associations. And if we find out about reductions in time, we will call an emergency board meeting to approve adjusted budgets and rates. In the second decision topic, the board considers approval of our policy option packages, which were developed under an assumption of a growing economy. The projections are now for $6.4 billion decline from original estimates, indicating a likely need for a 16% reduction in current service level throughout the state. The state has not issued revised budget instructions, and these POPs do reflect key needs of the agency. We will be asking for approval to move forward, knowing we will be bringing back the full budget in July for approval, allowing us to make appropriate adjustments. I think I'll stop there. I sent you the Ways and Means letter, and I was going to recap that, but in deference to time, I'm going to stop here. And then I'll check, are there any board members that would like to provide comments?
Peter, I'll offer a short comment. First, I want to thank you for your opening remarks. I think the events over the last several months and the last couple days are deeply troubling on multiple levels and cause for serious reflection by all of us. And so I appreciate your remarks and your calling attention to the various people that are suffering deeply in this country, not just now, but have been for a long time. So thank you. My understanding is this may be my last Board of Forestry meeting. And I plan to prepare a statement to kind of summarize that. But the events of the last few days have really absorbed my thoughts, and I didn't take as much time as Peter obviously did to prepare his statement. So let me just offer two quick thoughts. One is that the last 8 years serving on this board have demonstrated unequivocally to me the integrity, the commitment, and the positive motivation of everyone who works for Oregon's Department of Forestry. They have a difficult job managing a large and complex landscape with limited resources, and we've attached diverse and very conflicting social values to that landscape. And it's a landscape that's under increasing pressure, environmental, social, land use, etc. So I encourage everyone concerned about Oregon's forests and the roles these landscapes, these critical ecosystems play to support the quality of life we all cherish in this state, to work with the department as partners, not adversaries. There is much to be gained by transitioning from aggressive and defensive postures on all sides. To that end, I hope that the vision, leadership, and effort that went into the recent MOU between major stakeholders prevails and sets the stage for a more collaborative and productive era in the governance and management of Oregon's forests. No one stands to win anything durable by maintaining trench warfare. And that trench warfare has existed far too long in the arena of Oregon's forest policy. Banking on new appointments to this board to tip the scales mirrors the politicization of the Supreme Court and the uncertainty thus created in the interpretation of the foundation of our nation's law. It's time that a radical, practical center emerges with the vision and leadership needed to embrace the real environmental, social, and economic challenges we face, and that we commit to a real and lasting partnership to the mission of this department. And in this effort, equity must be our keystone, for without embracing equity, mutual benefit, we will never achieve durable political solutions, and we won't build the capacity and systems needed to address the challenges in our immediate horizon. It's been my honor and privilege to serve on this board with all of my fellow board members. I appreciate all the relationships I've benefited from over this time and hope they will continue. Thank you all and good luck to the next board.
Thanks, Nils. And I see Joe has his hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. And thanks, Nils. I really, being this may be the last board meeting with Cindy and Tom and Nils, thank you for all the work that you've done for Oregon. and I've learned a great deal from each and every one of you. So thank you very much for that. And thanks for your comments, Nils. I really appreciate that. My comment was to update the EQC and the Board of Forestry liaisons met on May 13th to discuss really the upcoming sufficiency decision related to the Siskiyous and the MOU. And of course, we had conversations related to the temporary rule that we'll be discussing today at the later in the meeting. And that, I think the conversation between the board and the EQC will shift to kind of what's next related to the temporary rule coming forward. And both agencies will really continue to work on alignment. You know, the EQC and Richard Whitman are really interested in this temporary rule and the MOU process. I think are very hopeful for what that brings forward to protection of streams in Oregon. And there was one message that Richard continues to talk about that I really appreciate, and he stresses in these liaison meetings and such, is that really protection of cold water doesn't always have to be regulatory, and that voluntary measures are also a very viable solution. And landowners in Oregon have had a long history of these kind of voluntary measures that have far exceeded the Forest Practices Act. You know, currently right now, I'm working on one of those projects in northeastern Oregon. And I think as landowners, we often don't talk enough about those sorts of voluntary measures that are doing great work targeting restorations in streams across Oregon. So that's the update. And if anybody has any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer that.
Any questions for Joe or any other comments from board members? Okay, I'd like to also thank you, Peter, for your opening comments. I think that it's really important for us to consider the context in which we're working, and I think you did a great job laying that out.